So anyway, as I mentioned, I'm the name on the bottom, but I owe a lot of credit to the main guy here, John Elder, who couldn't be with us today because he refused to pay the registration fee for APAJ, and he's probably in some bar right now having a good time. But it was his brainchild. The people in the back are laughing because they know it's true. Don't tell him I said that. He couldn't be here today because he had other commitments. So anyway, that's the name of the program. And so my colleague and I, and other of you who have been doing this too, have realized that in research, in academia, in clinical medicine, clinical positions around the country, where there is a great lack of diversity in terms of race and ethnicity. And our program focused on trying to help that pipeline along through the development of tenure track faculty at established universities in the United States. But most of you know that former Surgeon General Antonia Novello once said that we are the 3 to 5% group. We represent 3 to 5% in medicine and academia and all of that. So we really need programs like this, and we need collaborations amongst ourselves to really change the numbers and fill the pipeline with individuals potentially able to go on to these positions. And we need to also prevent the leakage, the people that don't make it in academia or sometimes fall out of their training programs and so forth. So that was the main purpose behind writing this proposal and developing this program. So as I mentioned before, we really want more diverse individuals with advanced degrees and successful ones at that. We also have been promoting through advocacy more awards that would help solve this problem. And then just developing the methodologies for training diverse faculty and health professions that will ultimately lead to filling the pipeline and preventing the leakage. The Pride program was a program that allowed for 6 sites, I believe, to address this issue in various ways. There was one center in New York that was focused on the science around behavior and sleep medicine, another one on cardiovascular genetics, another one on just cardiovascular-related research in general, and then comparative effectiveness as a method for analysis from Columbia University, and then a genomics program in Georgia University. And then ours. So ours was unique in the sense that we didn't focus on a scientific or an approach. We focused on a target population. So it was a little bit challenging to put the program together and at the same time meet the needs of diverse faculty that were admitted into the program. But I think eventually we got it right, and it was beneficial. So as I mentioned, our program is located at San Diego State University. We have an institute there that is a integrated research unit with multiple disciplines housed in the same building and doing multidisciplinary and transdisciplinary work. We call it the Institute for Behavioral and Community Health. And I really think it's a model for any university to put together. It's really hard for incoming faculty at major universities to be admitted as a faculty member, maybe given a small stipend of money, and try to launch a career without much support or role models or individuals and resources that could help them accelerate that whole process. But our program was funded from 2010 to 2014. And I'm sorry to say that, unfortunately, we weren't refunded due to the peer review process. We were thrown a curveball and got a bad call by the umpire. But we have the ideas in place, and we'll continue to write for future grants going forward. And maybe some of our graduates will take the stimulus and do it at their own universities as well. So the mentoring process kind of outlined here involved 1 year of tailored mentoring with program objectives for each mentee. So we tried to individualize it for the mentee. help them decide on a focus area or shift from a focus area. Sometimes individuals came in with very concrete and doable ideas, but other times individuals thought they had an idea, but after talking to others or seeing what other people were doing, kind of shifted. Or they may have become more cross-disciplinary by seeing the relationship between maybe some basic science and some psychosocial dimensions that they could weave into it. So that was a challenge because we had about 30 participants, and for myself and Dr. Elder and the other mentees in the program, we had to tailor everything. The other thing that we started that the other six sites picked up on was a site visit to each of the participants and their academic environment. This did a number of things. It brought attention to the mentee. Sometimes they're a small little fish in a big fish bowl and they get forgotten, but when bigwigs like Dr. Elder and myself come to visit them and call together their mentors, it kind of refocuses their thinking, gets them a little fame, and hopefully puts their mentors and supervisors kind of on the spot to ask them, what are you going to be doing? How are you going to help them? What can happen? And there have been some good stories there. In one case, you know, after our visit, one of our mentees got some release time from her clinical work to pursue her research, which was really good. So that was really good. And once we started sharing that experience with the other six sites, they all incorporated it. And I'm sure those that got renewed are still going to do that. So that was a valuable thing. And then following the annual meeting, we had an annual meeting in Washington, D.C., where we brought all the participants in the program together with the other six sites. And it was kind of a small, intimate little meeting where they got to present their work, got some cross ideas from the other mentees and the other sites. And so it was pretty nice because it was small and it was all focused on mentoring. And there was somewhat of an ambiance of support and critiquing and going on. So it was also very useful, I thought. And then as a final part of the program, we provided a small stipend for the mentees to go to other programs or purchase things or do whatever they wanted with it. So as I've hinted, there have been some challenges, and whether to focus on a pure one scientific area versus just going with a Latino research theme presented some challenges for us putting together the program, because there were some individuals that were very basic science-y focused and others that were psychosocial focused, and trying to get the right speakers and the right mix was somewhat of a challenge. But I think by the third year, we were actually expanding more into basic science and getting more and more diverse speakers. So I think it was useful, and I'll ask my colleagues as they come up to comment on that. The first year as a cohort, we met our recruitment goal of about 6 to 8, but after the word got out, word of mouth, we were inundated with a lot of applications, so we definitely know there's a need for these kind of programs out there. So just to give you a flavor of all the mentees in the program, 2011 was the first cohort, and this is the distribution of individuals. These are the names and their locations there. I'm not going to spend time with the universities that they were affiliated with, but we got some individuals as far away as Harvard. These two individuals up here at the top were benefited from the program. They were actually at Harvard University. They were in the same building, but they had never met each other, because that's how big Harvard is. There's just so many people there. And they ended up meeting each other in San Diego and becoming colleagues, and now they can work together and support each other. And then in 2012, we have an additional cohort of individuals. Filling in the middle area is Colorado now, but many more from Texas. And then in 2013, these individuals. So this is just the next couple of slides, just show you some of the names of the presenters that we had and their topics to give you an idea. We have Jim Salas, who's big in physical activity and the built environment. We have Hector Balcazar, who is very big in community-based work and the Promotora model, and then some of our own faculty locally there as well as across the country. A lot of folks that are working on disparities. William Vega is a well-known researcher in psychology and mental health, and just to name a few, but I'll let you read through those. We have the experts in nutrition, physical activity, and measurement, so that was a big help. We didn't put it in there, but we also had sidebar discussions on acculturation and instrumentation and things like that. A lot of emphasis was placed on grant writing because that's key for junior faculty to succeed in academia. So we had some really good individuals that are well known in this area, and I think almost burned out our mentees with the intensity with which they were asked to present their material, work on it, and so forth. And then we also threw in some grant management. We had a panel of program managers, because a lot of folks, once you get big grants, you also can't be doing that as a researcher. You got to hire folks to manage that, and we put together a panel of some of our best program managers to give them feedback. We also brought in some promotoras, I think. I didn't put it down here, but so we all the other stuff that's peripheral to the science, we tried to give some guidance on. So this is just a slide that talks about our goals for the site visit. We tried to advocate on their behalf, as I mentioned. We tried to help them think about developing networks. We tried to give them some ideas on how to approach things and so forth. And that's about it. So are there any questions? So the purpose of this session was to kind of present the Pride as an overview, and then the next set of presenters are going to give you their work and how